Well, have a great weekend.
This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke at length Thursday amid tensions over a proposed visit to Taiwan by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, which China's foreign ministry spokesperson has warned would be met with forceful measures. A senior administration official told reporters afterward that the two leaders also discussed the value of meeting face-to-face and agreed to have their teams follow up to find a mutual agreeable time to do so. Craig Singleton, senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense Democracies, says the continuing dialogue between Biden and Xi could eventually lead to progress on some issues.
In the coming weeks and months, perhaps we'll see greater opportunity for there to be movement, particularly on the economic front and tariffs. But for now, I suspect that we'll continue to see once a quarter or so a Xi-Biden phone call where the dial doesn't move much, but the two leaders can continue to foster their relationship.
Thursday's was the fifth call between the two leaders since Biden took office in 2021. On Thursday, for the first time in weeks, Russia launched missile attacks on Ukraine's Kyiv and the northern Chernihiv region. Ukraine says the attacks are retaliation for its continued resistance. 15 people were wounded, five of them civilians in the attacks. Kyiv's regional director, governor that is, linked the attacks to the Day of Statehood commemoration that Ukraine marked on Thursday for the first time. Meanwhile, Ukraine said it had launched an offensive to recapture Kherson, that Russia had took control of earlier in the war. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also on the VOA mobile app via remote. This is VOA News. Under fire, U.S. officials say monkeypox can still be stopped. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has the story.
Top Biden administration health officials said Thursday the monkeypox outbreak in the U.S. can still be stopped, but cases continue to rise and the administration is being criticized about the pace of the response. Even as federal leaders announced plans to distribute 780,000 shots of the two-dose Jynneos vaccine, health departments in San Francisco, New York, and Washington, D.C. said they don't have enough shots to meet demand. As of Wednesday, the CDC said there were more than 4,600 reported monkeypox cases in the U.S., and federal health officials expect the numbers to rise. The monkeypox virus mainly spreads through skin-on-skin contact, but it can also transmit through touching linens used by someone with the infection. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The governor of the U.S. state of Kentucky says at least eight people have died from flooding caused by heavy rains that also triggered mudslides in parts of the central Appalachia region. Governor Andy Beshear said Thursday property damage has been massive, with hundreds losing their homes. Water rescues continue across the region. In eastern Kentucky's Perry County, the emergency management director caused the damage catastrophic. Iranian emergency services said at least seven people were killed in floods near Tehran Thursday, most in a landslide that dumped mud 4 meters deep in a village just west of the capital. The Iranian Red Crescent said six people were confirmed dead in the village and nine were injured, while 14 others were missing. More than 500 people were evacuated, according to the statement made. The flash flooding near Tehran in the foothills of the Alborz Mountains comes less than a week after floods in the normally arid south of Iran left 22 people dead. Japanese media says Japan and the United States are expected to agree on joint research for next-generation semiconductors during economic talks in Washington on Friday. Japan's foreign ministry and trade minister will meet the U.S. Secretary of State and Commerce Secretary for the first time of economic talks on Friday. Supply chain security is expected to be a major topic. And the Biden administration is launching a renewed push for COVID-19 booster shots for those eligible, pointing to the enhanced protection they offer against illnesses as the highly transmissible BA5 variant spreads across the country. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Today's Friday, July 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, tensions rises on the Korean Peninsula as the North and South raise the specter of a preemptive nuclear strike.
He also stressed that the South Korean government and military could be completely destroyed, annihilated, wiped out if it chooses to do a preemptive strike.
Ukraine launches a counteroffensive to retake Russia-controlled cities as the Kremlin strikes the capital city of Kyiv.
Today, Ukrainians around the country in almost every region woke up very early because starting from 4 a.m., air raid sirens were on in many different regions.
And President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping could meet in person for the first time amid rising tensions. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has threatened to use nukes amid tensions with the U.S. and South Korea. State media reports that Jong-un said his country is ready to mobilize its nuclear war deterrent and counter any U.S. military clash. He criticized South Korea's new president for the first time, warning Seoul was pushing towards the brink of war. Associated Press correspondent Charles Deladesma reports.
State media says Kim's warning he's ready to use nukes in potential military conflicts as he unleashes fiery rhetoric against rivals he says are pushing the Korean Peninsula to the brink of war. Kim accuses Washington of demonizing North Korea to justify its hostile policies and U.S.-South Korea military drills targeting North Korea, he says, show the U.S.'s double standards and gangster-like aspects because it brands North Korea's routine military activities, an apparent reference to its missile tests, as provocations or threats. I'm Charles Deladesma.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's office on Thursday expressed deep regret over North Korea leaders Kim Jong-un's, quote, menacing, unquote, remarks of Yoon, saying South Korea is capable of, quote, strongly and effectively, unquote, responding to any provocations at any time. U.S. spokeswoman Kang In-sun, in a briefing, urged its lucrative neighbor to take the path of dialogue to achieve substantive denuclearization and peace. Tensions have continued to rise between the nations who are technically still at war that has lasted decades. For more, I spoke with VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo.
We hadn't seen Kim Jong-un in about 3 weeks, but when he did appear, he gave a speech, and it was a doozy, and he made a lot of threats towards South Korea, towards the United States. He mentioned his nuclear weapons many times and stressed that he was willing to use them if necessary. He also stressed that the South Korean government and military could be completely destroyed, annihilated, wiped out, if it chooses to do a preemptive strike. South Korea's president has made many comments regarding a possible preemptive strike if they see North Korea preparing a preemptive strike. So really, you have a situation where both sides are sort of talking, well, no, we'll do it first. No, we'll do it first. And this is not a great situation when one side has nuclear weapons and the other is protected by the United States, which of course has nuclear weapons.
Usually when it comes to diplomacy, countries or leaders tend to watch their words. But the North Korean leader specifically mentioned the South Korean leader by name. Is this something significant?
I think so. As you mentioned, this is the first time that Kim Jong-un has mentioned the South Korean new conservative president, Yoon Suk-yeol, by name. And he mentioned him three times by name in this speech. It is notable, though, that he hasn't done that yet. And it is notable that he put a lot of qualifiers on his threat in his speech. This is good and bad, I think. There is definitely a trend toward more tensions between North and South Korea. However, there's a long way we have to fall. This is not something that usually just ramps up immediately, 0 to 60, right away. It can take many months. And over the next few months, we have sort of what is expected to be a sort of long slide into what is going to be a more tense state. We have a U.S. South Korea military exercises. We have what is expected to be a North Korean nuclear test. These are events that are regular. They've happened quite often in recent years. However, they will raise tensions and they will raise international interest in this story, and North Korea likes to take advantage of that. You know, we have a long way to go here and things could get very tense in the next several months.
That's VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo speaking with me from the South Korean capital. In the early hours of the morning, residents in the Ukrainian capital city of Kyiv were working to a whirring sound echoing throughout the city Missile strikes were also reported throughout the country. The renewed attack comes as Ukrainian forces continue to mount their counteroffensive against the Russian invaders. Reporter Anna Chernikova joins us with more.
Today, Ukrainians around the country in almost every region woke up very early because starting from 4 a.m., air raid sirens were on in many different regions. More than 20 missiles were launched by Russian forces on the territory of Ukraine. Four regions that suffered the most, so it's Kyiv, Chernihiv, Kharkiv, Mykolaiv, Dnipro, and the worst missile attack happened at around 11 o'clock in the morning in the city of Kropyvnytsky, which is central part of the country. At least 25 people are injured. Five people, unfortunately, were killed. Ukrainians continue some actions in the Kherson region. We know that more villages were liberated, and we know that more Russian military storages with equipment and with manpower were destroyed as well. And also we hear that there are some advances of the Ukrainian forces in the east. It all happens in the area of Donetsk region, but it's difficult to say now exactly the location.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova from Kyiv. British military intelligence is saying that Ukraine's effort to retake the Russian-controlled city of Kherson is pushing forward and has virtually cut off the city. But Ukraine's government says Russian forces are also conducting, quote, massive redeployment, unquote, of their own. Matthew Laratonda of Reuters reports.
Thursday marks Ukraine's Statehood Day holiday, and as it honors its soldiers killed in the conflict with Russia, British intelligence is saying that the Ukrainian military's ongoing counteroffensive to retake the city of Kherson in the country's south appears to be gaining momentum. Russian military vehicles seen occupied city this week, a street vendor's sign proclaiming that they will take Russian rubles. The UK says its ally has virtually cut off the city from the rest of Russian-occupied territory, and Ukraine says it's stepping up the assault with airstrikes. But it also says that Russia is massively redeploying its troops into defensive positions, pulling forces in from the east. Ukraine has also acknowledged a loss elsewhere, confirming that Russian forces captured the country's second-largest power plant in Donbass. It's downplaying the importance of Russia's gain. Neither side has disclosed the number of soldiers killed in the conflict either, but U.S. intelligence says it estimates about 15,000 Russian soldiers have been killed so far and three times as many wounded. It says Ukrainian losses are probably slightly less than Russia's. The UN says over 5,000 civilians are confirmed to be killed, but the actual number is likely much higher.
That's Matthew Laratonda of Reuters. The Turkish military has increased its bombardment of Kurdish forces near the town of Taltama in northeast Syria, forcing hundreds of villagers to flee their homes. VOA's Dana Omar has more in a story narrated by Siwan Kajo.
Over the past few days, Turkey's military has intensified its attacks near a Kurdish-held town in northeast Syria, targeting a number of villages near the Syria-Turkey border. Residents are worried that the aggression is a prelude to a Turkish military offensive into the region, targeting U.S.-backed Kurdish troops that Ankara has branded as terrorists. The bombardment has forced hundreds of villagers to flee their homes and seek safety in the nearby town of Tel Tamer. Many fleeing civilians say they were forced to leave all their possessions behind. The Syrian conflict is more than a decade old, and the civilians caught in the middle of the fighting say all they want is to see the fighting finally stop. There are currently 16 official and unofficial camps for displaced persons in northeast Syria, according to local officials. They say a new Turkish military operation would create yet another displacement crisis in the region. For Zana Omar in northeast Syria, Sirwan Kejo, VOA News.
Mali's military government says coordinated insurgent attacks on Wednesday killed 15 troops and three civilians while leaving scores of militants dead. Analysts say the attacks show increasing insecurity in the West African country following the withdrawal of French forces. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
The attacks were launched Wednesday against military targets in Mopti, a city in central Mali, as well as in Sokolo and Kalumba, also in central Mali. The Malian army issued a statement saying it neutralized 48 militants. The statement was read by Ibrahima Dembélé, presenter for Mali's national TV and radio station ORTM.
L'état-major général des armées rassure les Maliens et appelle les observateurs.
The chief of staff of the armed forces reassures Malians and calls on observers not to be deceived by the recent acts of an adversary losing momentum, he says. According to the analysis of the chief of staff, he says, the recent attacks, which confirm signals and clues previously detected and identified by us, show the final throes of armed terrorist groups on our territory. Fodie Tanjigora, a sociology professor at the University of Bamako and researcher on security in Mali for several organizations, said via a messaging app from Bamako that despite such assurances, the situation in Mali is getting worse and has entered a new phase in which Islamist militants are able to better organize and carry out simultaneous planned attacks. Militants also launched a series of attacks last week in several localities before attacking Kati, a town just 15 kilometers from Bamako and home to the army's main military base. Tanjigora says these attacks are meant to send a message.
C'est un message, non seulement à l'endroit de l'opinion publique.
It's a message, he says, not only towards public opinion, but also and especially to the international community, to say that ultimately the Malian army, contrary to the impression which has been conveyed by them, do not have the ability to maintain security on Malian territory. Insecurity has been mounting in Mali in recent months as the French army completes the process of withdrawing from the country. French President Emmanuel Macron is currently visiting several countries in West Africa, where France continues to send military support to certain countries in the fight against extremism. The French army was primarily active in Mali's north. Macron announced the withdrawal of troops in February, following increasing tensions with Mali's military government and concerns about the government working with Russian mercenaries. Reports of mercenaries committing human rights abuses have been published by Human Rights Watch and several international media outlets since March. Tanjigora says that public opinion in Mali is widely in favor of a Russian intervention, which many hope can end the country's rampant insecurity. He says that though Mali maintains that it only works with official Russian instructors, whether official soldiers or mercenaries, the presence of these soldiers has had little effect on the security situation. Tanjigora also says that the state is failing to address widespread misinformation circulating on social networks, which has contributed to increasing tensions in the country. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
In other news, President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping could meet in person for the first time since Biden took office, a senior administrative official said on Thursday. The two leaders spent more than 2 hours on the phone amid rising tensions between their nations. Xi emphasized China's claim over Taiwan, and the Minister of Foreign Affairs said, quote, those who play with fire will perish by it, unquote. For its part, the White House said Biden underscored U.S. opposition to, quote, unilateral efforts to change the status quo or undermine peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait, unquote. Relations between the two countries have been strained by talk of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's potential trip to the island, which has a Democratic government. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu in Washington. The World Health Organization is calling for greater investment in the development of new vaccines to keep pace with the rapidly evolving variants of the coronavirus. Alyssa Schneier reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Health Organization says Gavi's multi-million-dollar funding marks a key advance in the fight against one of Africa's most severe public health threats. It notes that countries in sub-Saharan Africa bear the brunt of the yearly toll of more than 240 million global cases of malaria, including more than 600,000 reported deaths. The main victims are children under age 5. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says one child dies every minute in Africa, with catastrophic consequences for families, communities, and national development. The vaccine was introduced in Africa in 2019. Since then, more than 1.3 million children have benefited from the life-saving inoculations in three pilot countries, Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. Moeti says those countries have reported a 30% drop in hospitalizations of children with severe malaria and a 9% reduction in child deaths.
So if delivered at scale, millions of new cases could be averted and tens of thousands of lives saved every year. We were encouraged to see that the demand for the vaccine is high, even in the context of COVID-19, with the first dose reaching between 73% to over 90% coverage.
Managing Director of Country Programs at Gavi, Thabani Mafosa, calls the vaccine the most effective tool in the fight against malaria. He says the vaccine will save children's lives. However, he notes demand for the life-saving product will outstrip supply.
Our challenge during this critical phase is to ensure the doses we have available are used as effectively and equitably as possible. With this in mind, Gavi today is opening an application window for malaria support.
He says the three pilot countries will have the first crack at applying for and receiving funding. He adds that those countries already have experience in rolling out the vaccine, so practically speaking, he says, they will require little help in setting up their systems to get the operation underway. Mafosa says a second round of funding will take place at the end of the year. At that time, he says, other countries that have moderate to high cases of severe malaria will be able to submit applications for support. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Russia announces plans to sever a long-term space relationship, plus a private space company extends its record of successful launches, and NASA scores a win for its upcoming moon mission. VOA's Arash Rabasadi brings us the week in space.
And lift off.
We begin on a launch pad in Cape Canaveral, Florida, where private spaceflight company SpaceX continues beating its own record for successful flights. This time, the Falcon 9 rocket carried another batch of Starlink satellites to orbit, adding to the constellation of satellites delivering broadband access across the planet. It was the company's 33rd launch this year after 31 launches in 2021. Bombshell news emerged this week from a televised meeting in Moscow. Russia's new space chief, Yuri Borisov, told Russian President Vladimir Putin the agency will pull out of the International Space Station, or ISS, after 2024. Russia's announcement followed the 47th anniversary of the 1975 Apollo-Soyuz mission between the U.S. and USSR, which marked the first international space partnership. For those who've been following the history of that partnership, Moscow's threatened pullout is nothing new.
Russia has said in the past that they were going to end this after 2024. They're saying they're going to start their own space station. They've been saying for decades that they're going to build new capsules to replace the Soyuz, new rockets, space stations, moon. You just hear stuff from them constantly, and the vast majority of it never happens. So are they really going to end their participation in 2024? I don't know.
The announcement follows a tandem spacewalk this week between cosmonaut Oleg Artemyev and Italian astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti. If Russia ultimately halts participation, experts say that could spell trouble for the ISS.
They could just leave. That would be a disaster. Our segment doesn't have a propulsion module. The American segment points the station up, down, left, right. Unless you put the big rocket engine where the Russian segment is, which pushes right through the center of the station, you're firing one rocket to speed it up and another rocket to keep it from spinning, so you waste a lot of propellant.
Colonel Wirtz added that the federal government could incentivize private spaceflight companies like SpaceX and Axiom Space to fill in the gaps created by a Russian departure from the ISS. U.S. officials expressing disappointment over Russia's announcement, which comes as Moscow weathers international sanctions over the invasion of Ukraine. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the Russian state-owned news agency TASS, Yuri Borisov, chief of Roscosmos, the country's space agency, said at a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin that Russia will leave the International Space Station project after 2024. It will then focus on creating its own national orbital station. The Roscosmos chief said in the TASS article that, quote, "We will definitely fulfill all our obligations to our partners, but the decision to withdraw from this station after 2024 has been made," unquote. In a Washington Post article, Robin Gattens, NASA's director of the ISS, said that the space agency had not received any official word from Russia, but that, quote, "We'll be talking more about their plan moving forward," unquote. NASA recently announced plans to extend the mission of the ISS until 2030. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up, our periodic update on U.S. politics. Veteran analysts John Fortier and Jim Kessler discuss the key takeaways from the most recent congressional hearing about former President Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the results of the 2020 election by fomenting and then failing to stop a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol. They talk headwinds for Democrats in the upcoming midterm elections and more. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joe Biden has committed to curtailing the use of landmines worldwide. This policy change reflects the president's belief that these weapons have a disproportionate impact on civilians, including children, long after fighting has stopped. The new commitment will align U.S. landmine policy outside of the Korean Peninsula with the key requirements of the Ottawa Convention, the international treaty prohibiting the use, stockpiling, production, and transfer of anti-personnel landmines. The unique circumstances on the Korean Peninsula and the U.S. commitment to the defense of the Republic of Korea preclude the United States from changing anti-personnel landmine policy on the Korean Peninsula at this time. The United States will not develop, produce, or acquire anti-personnel landmines, nor export or transfer anti-personnel landmines, except when necessary for activities related to mine destruction or removal and for the purpose of destruction. The U.S. will not use anti-personnel landmines outside the Korean Peninsula, nor assist, encourage, or induce anyone outside the context of the Korean Peninsula to engage in activity that would be prohibited by the Ottawa Convention. The United States will seek to destroy anti-personnel landmines and their stockpiles not required for the defense of the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. will continue to pursue material and operational solutions that would allow the United States to accede to the Ottawa Convention while at the same time ensure the United States' ability to meet its alliance commitments. The United States' actions are in sharp contrast to Russia's actions in Ukraine, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Political Military Affairs Stan Brown. In Ukraine, there is compelling evidence that Russian forces are using explosive munitions, including landmines, in an irresponsible manner, which is causing extensive harm to civilians and damage to vital civilian infrastructure there. The United States is proud to lead the world in conventional weapons destruction. We've invested more than $4.2 billion in more than 100 countries since 1993 to promote international peace and security through our conventional weapons destruction programs, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Brown. We'll continue this important work and remain committed to continuing partnerships to address the humanitarian impacts of anti-personnel landmines.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.